This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We've got another hour of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with Broadway Is My Beat. We'll hear Joan Ellen's Body, their story from March 21st, 1953. After that, it's Sherlock Holmes and the Mazarin Stone, his story from January 4th, 1948.
My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Late afternoon of March, and Broadway moves in tired languor. The time of waking spectaculars and slow staining of color in twisted neon tubes. And this, ebb of sunlight performing on the shoulders of a woman who drifts from one season into another. The time of the late afternoon break and interval before the comptometers summon you back to their paternal wizardry. 10 minutes allotted to lean your head against winter stone, lift your face to the slow coming of spring, and flick the cigarette after the passers-by. A piece of the day, and it was all yours. And at headquarters, the time for the recording of violence is in quadruplicate. And clear the desk of odds and ends, the statements on grief, the stenographic reports on anguish, and sip the cold coffee in the wax container.
Busy, Danny?
Just clearing a few things off my desk.
Yeah, maybe you better make room.
Huh?
Because I brought you something.
I give up. What, Muggerman?
I got it downstairs, interrogation room. If you're tired of the lull, I'm filling it for you.
All right, let's go. You going to tell me, Muggerman, or are you going to wait till we get there, open the door, and yell, surprise, surprise?
I've been questioning a man on the matter of a car theft.
Car theft?
Don't go big on me, Danny. It's got murder in it.
What?
The thief doesn't know we know it yet. You coming, Danny? Okay, officer, you can get back now. Thanks. Lieutenant, I'll take over. Well, this is our boy, Danny.
What's your name?
You kidding?
Lieutenant, only kids on a full stomach, mister. Right now, it's 10 minutes before dinner time. So
tell them... The amount of times I give my name over.
Try once more, huh?
Georgie Haven.
Where do you live, Georgie?
I haven't established residence as yet. I'm an out-of-towner. I guess what? I guess I got carried away with the splendor of it all, of your great metropolis.
So you hopped into a long black car and drove away.
The car was sitting at the curb, key in the ignition. For the 15 minutes, I watched it. And beings it was there, and beings I've always wanted as a child to drive across the Brooklyn Bridge, Now, fellas, I knew I couldn't get away with it, dressed like a bum at the wheel of a multi-cylinder cad.
Where you come from, Georgie?
North Dakota. So now let me ask you a question, huh?
All right.
Big shop you boys have got here, right? Coming in here after I was picked up, I noticed everything's got a department. First they took me to a place titled Traffic Violations. Now all of a sudden I'm in a place called Homicide. Question. How come?
Answer. A dead woman in the trunk of the car. She was bludgeoned to death, slugged with a jack handle.
Oh, you're not going to get away with it, that's
all. What about it, Georgie?
You heard what I said. You're not going to get away with it. You're lying through your teeth. There ain't no
dead woman. Come on, Georgie. We'll show you. Come on. Yeah, this way, Georgie.
What do you think I'm going to write him to North Dakota about this place, huh? You thought about that?
We're here. How long were you driving the car before the officer caught you, Georgie?
All morning.
I thought you said that...
Oh, it's a fib. I saw the car around dawn, drove around to get the feel of the traffic in the car before I... Uh-oh.
Police photographers, Georgie. And technicians. Also...
Yeah, I see. Look, I didn't kill her. Listen.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what else to tell you. I didn't kill her.
Get him out of here, Muggerman. Book him.
Right. Come on, George.
You planted it. You don't think you can get away with it just because I've blown you from out of town. You can't get away with it.
Officer Gaines, Lieutenant. A few things here we can tell you about now.
Mm-hmm.
No identification on the woman. Fancily dressed. handbag with the usual stuff, lipstick, powder, you know. No driver's license. This, though. The letter we found in it.
Thanks. Yeah. Joan. See me tonight or never again. I don't know how, but I'm sure of it. I have the strength to do it. I'll kill myself. Harry.
Mailed the day before yesterday from the postmark.
Yeah. You got anything else, officer?
I opened the glove compartment. Registration card in it. Made out to an Ann Martin on Park. Here. That's it, Lieutenant.
Yes, what is it?
I'm from the police, Danny Clover.
And I'm Ann Martin, and you can tell me right out what it is you want.
Some information about Joan Allen.
It never tires me to talk about Joan with anyone. Anyone who'll stand still. Please come in.
Thank you.
I was just finishing a singularly lonely dinner. This has been a day without beaux and without old youths clamoring for me. Will you have coffee, Mr. Clover?
No, thanks.
How nice. Black? Cream, sugar? How, Mr. Clover?
Black.
Of course. Here you are. Early fall of night, and the time to speak of Joan.
A friend of yours?
I have the greenest envy for her beauty. I am stunned by what her loveliness does to both men and women when she just stands still in a room, and I am her friend.
What else about her?
What else would there have to be about a woman?
Her friends. A man who wrote her a note, signed it Harry, for instance.
I don't know a Harry. I know a husband, Robert, a gifted man, man of intellect and rare taste in antiquities and present beauty. Robert Allen, contributor to Top Drawer magazines. Robert Allen, historian. Robert Allen, husband to beauty. Husband to Joan. And you to Joan?
He found her in your car, murdered.
Yesterday afternoon, Joan came to me and said she wanted my car, and I gave it to her, and she was very done up and bleeding.
That was yesterday. It didn't worry you. She hadn't brought it back. It didn't...
Please, please, please don't stop me. Joanie asks for my car often because her husband won't permit her to drive. She has theories on the vulnerability of beauty. Joanie comes to me, and I give her my car, and sometimes she won't return it for days on end, and I ask her about it, and she says there was rain or there was twilight. Look at the days she had it. So sorry, dear Anne. What would you like to hear about Anne? Joan's friend Anne. Let's talk about Anne.
I'm sorry.
Oh, not for Anne. Don't be sorry for her. Rich girl and with a job, too. And she has beautiful friends. And dead friends. And you mustn't tell Robert I let his precious have my car. Robert would be furious. Get out.
Where do they live?
Next block up, the corner apartment house. Get out.
Look,
I know the rules. I shall keep my grieving within the borough. And I shall not ask again. Get out.
And leave her. Walk the block to where her friend had lived. Apartment of the long canopy, fringed. The core of French poodle already clipped and bow ribbon for the jaunts of spring. Dormant of the question mark eyebrows. And the long gliding ascent. Maybe 400 feet above sea level. Corridor to an historian.
You wish something?
And the release of music to spill into corridor, and over the man's shoulder, a room lighted with images. A Roman head in aged marble and sightless eyes on ebony pedestal. A Greek torso, winged and in flight. A Chinese goddess in porcelain, and across the serenity of her outstretched hands, a bough in blossom. And focal point of all the classic beauty, a wall lined with portraits of a woman, impressions, suggestions, reflections of a woman.
What can I do for you?
Mr. Allen, Robert Allen?
Yes, that's right.
My name is Clover, police.
Please come in.
Thank you.
I was enjoying some music and a drink, Mr. Silver. Would you care for some wine? Mr. Clover?
Oh, sorry.
Don't apologize. These portraits are my own indulgence and pride. They're of my wife.
Beautiful.
That's not precisely the word. This one now, we were in Spain on our honeymoon and saw the mantilla. Personally, I believe the touch a trifle coy. What do you think?
Well,
No? Exotic? Perhaps. Joan has a chameleon-like quality. Where she is, what the circumstances, Joan mirrors it somehow. You see this one in India with the sari? One would say... Oh, what would you say, Mr. Clover?
One of the loveliest portraits I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Nor does it do my wife justice. There's a thing about her. If she were here, you'd see it, I'm sure. The elusive, aloof. Sometimes I confess it's being married to 1,000 women.
Do you know where she is, Mr. Allen?
I know. No, I don't.
Isn't that unusual?
In character. Joan goes off at times, communes with whatever she communes with. When I'm too much with her or her surroundings, I'm lucky. She always comes back.
Strallen.
Yes.
Strallen, she's dead.
No. Surely you wouldn't be joking. And no, I don't know where she is. Help me.
I'm...
Help me. Help me. Help me.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Tomorrow evening on CBS Radio, Lionel Barrymore's Hall of Fame Theater turns the spotlight on another little-known hero of American history, with a dramatization of the important events in that person's life. For still more outstanding Sunday night drama, don't miss your Theater of Stars with Vincent Price appearing in The Impresario, a drama of tangled emotions set against a colorful ballet background. Remember, too, Sunday nights on most of these same stations, CBS Radio's dramatic Escape Dramas. On the morning of a new March day, Broadway moves quickly. Last night's carnival is memory again, after image, but still dimly heard, and 10 hours away again. It's cross the corner and dodge the traffic time, go to work time, sandwiches in brown paper bags, and resolve to see about the raise today. And hurry up, the moving hand on the time clock writes in purple ink and docks for lateness. And strung through all of it, loudspeaker music carried on the skirl of a breeze. Lean into it, inhale it. It's the good time, brand new day, and Broadway wears sun on its cheek. And at my office at headquarters, sunlight had its special quality. It touched iron grillwork and street and dust before it sifted in, found its place near the file cabinet, and lay there. Was picked up and became a man and was named Sergeant Gino Tartaglia.
A bright and cheery good morning to you, Danny.
Same to you, Gino.
Nice of you to think of.
Don't mention it.
Aren't we friends, Danny?
Oh, Gino is...
I was telling this to Mrs. Tartaglia last night. How friendly...
Please, Gino.
And she patted me on top of the head. A gesture she only does in a sentimental mood. Now to work, if you please.
Thank you very much.
Certainly. Rundown on the deceased Mrs. Joan Allen reveals only snatches of info, such as... She had no business driving a car since no driver license had been issued to her.
All right, what else?
That some 7 years ago, when her maiden name was Westfall, Joan Westfall, she had a slight altercation with a man named Tom Marino. They took a shot at him.
Oh?
Tom Marino, whose present address I give you, it seems, jilted her. Stood her up almost at the altar. She took a shot at him. Mr. Marino good-naturedly called it an accident and did not bring charges. However, Danny...
Danny Clover speaking.
This is Harry Barton.
Harry Barton? Yes, what is it?
Well, this morning's paper carried an item about a note found on the person of Mrs. Allen who was murdered.
Uh-huh.
The note was signed Harry. I'm Harry. I thought I'd call.
I've been wondering how to find you. Where can I see you?
I work at Naden's Swedish Kitchen on Madison Avenue, a grocery store.
Thanks. I'll be right there, Mr. Barton.
Fella, up from a very recent phone conversation.
Mm-hmm. You, Barton.
I got to tell you, it was very thoughtful how you parked the prowl car a little up the street, not in front, so...
You want to talk here, Barton?
Give me a minute to shiver and shake, huh? The whole way of life is blowing up right in my face.
You kill her? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Nothing of the kind. Absolutely nothing of the kind. What kind of talk is that between fellas? I killed Joan, Mrs. Allen.
You knew she was married?
For over a year and a half now, I've been suggesting delicacies for her table. I wouldn't know she's married.
Look,
And delivering same to her house and stacking same on her butler's pantry. And this was nothing. I would have crawled on my face down Madison Avenue in broad daylight if Mrs. Allen gave the word.
That's how much you were in love with her.
To such an extent that I wrote verses. Tiny poems on back of receipts from the cash register.
And what?
And instead of a slap from her, she would give me that certain secret, mysterious smile that beautiful women can give to a fellow. More than a fellow like me in his wildest dreams.
What kind of a fellow are you, Barton? You haven't really told me.
32 I'll never see again. Downhill from over the hump. And baldish. See? Up here? A fellow who'll go for any patent hair restorer, any remedy for what ails him. That kind, ordinary.
But also deep and intense. A man who'll write a note promising suicide if the woman he loves...
But exactly that kind. Destroy me.
And the note worked?
A year ago. I wrote to Mrs. Allen exactly the same type note as you found. It worked then.
No?
She received my note. Immediately, she rushed to my room. I felled myself at her feet. I read to her from the collected works of Harry Barton. That's myself. I played lush music on the machine. And in a while, she went away. And it was the most stunning evening of my life.
And last night, after you wrote her another note, you were stunned again.
With one variation. I made a terrible mistake. I touched her. I put my hand to her cheek, and she hit me, and she flew out and drove away in a long, black, expensive car. From the window, I watched her drive right out of my life. I'll tell you, even if it sounds corny, my life went with her.
You'll stick around, my Barton.
From 9 to 6, the rest of my life in Naden's Swedish kitchen.
So leave the place of the delicacies, and outside, consult now the piece of paper named Tom Marino, once fiancé to Joan Allen. Address on East 38. Go there. Park the car under a tree whose branches are still slicked by winter. And the house of old aristocracy, partitioned now into 3-room flats and rented to those whose income affords a genteel and respectable location. One flight up, softly lit corridor. And Mr. Marino is tailored and smiling.
From the police, you say?
Polite.
Please come in.
And cooperative.
Joan Allen. Of course, be glad to tell you all I can about him.
He does.
How many years ago was it? Let me see. Name was Joan Westfall then. About 7 years ago.
I understand you were engaged to her.
Once I counted myself fortunate. She was very lovely, you know. A young man in love, and when it's returned, always fortunate. But to have that sort of relationship with a beauty like Joan, look in the mirror and love yourself for this miraculous thing you've accomplished.
Yet you jilted her.
You have any idea what kind of life it would have been, being married to a woman like Joan?
You said so yourself. She was lovely.
She didn't react, Mr. Clover.
Oh?
I suddenly realized it. The things I liked, important things, cherished things that you save for secrets for someone you're going to love for the rest of your life. I'd tell Joan about them, she'd smile wisely. That's all. No reaction, just the smile. You know why?
Tell me.
She didn't understand.
I don't quite.
She didn't understand, that's all. She's dead now. We'll be kind to her. She was beautiful, truly beauty. And she had a languid way about her. I suppose to most men, she seemed mysterious.
She took a shot at you when you walked out on her.
No, I laughed. It was that funny, so out of character. Mr. Clover.
Yeah?
She's dead now. I think you know now all I can tell you about Joan.
I think so. Thanks a lot, Mr. Marino. For a while, walk with it through mid-afternoon street. Past the doorways of boy and girl with school books solving old early spring mysteries and coming up wonder-eyed with the proven solutions. Past open windows and the halting trickle of the current piano lesson. And past the slow, smiling street dance of an old woman with open arms who dances the winter waltz to broken scales. And to a wall that overlooks river. and pose against its flow the violent image, the death in a car trunk of a woman, and the other images of her beauty, of her silences, of her furies, of a man who had rejected her, diminished her silences and her mysteries. And make a decision. Flip the cigarette into coiling waters. Head uptown to where a friend of Joan Allen's was grieving, or said she would.
Today's another day, Mr. Clover. Gold Star Day. A beau called, whispered something that I interpreted to mean dry martinis, dinner, a show.
I want to talk to you, Miss Martin.
This very moment, my beau has his fork in the olive jar. That's how winged I said I'd be.
It won't take long.
Come in.
Thanks.
5 minutes, Mr. Clover. That's the life expectancy of a girl's martini these days.
About Joan Allen.
What else would we have in common?
Man named Tom Marino just talked to me about her. Told me things you left out when I spoke to you yesterday about Joan's reactions to things, to everything.
Well?
Joan was your close friend, so you'd know.
From the time we were girl children together, from the time we didn't know anything about anything, hardly anything, that is.
Tell me about it.
The life and times and tragedies of girl children, like girl in the brownie, then girl with one leg on hot rod, then girl in white frock, then girl into capital letters womanhood, like that?
You and Joan Allen, that's all. Because she was murdered.
It persisted with her.
What?
The not knowing anything about anything.
Go on.
It persisted with Joan. In high school, it took 3 private tutors to get her out of Algebra 1A. With English, I helped her. With Latin, there was a 15-year-old boy of Latin descent. The ancient conjugations were old hat to him. A very beautiful boy.
How about Joan?
With close teamwork, we got Joan graduated from high school. In the small-time college she went to, she was on her own. She was flunked out in 1 semester.
Hmm. You understand why?
I understand only this, that you've made me despoiled beauty, reveal to you the goddess with the mind of clay. My martini will be getting warm, Mr. Clover. Adios, Mr. Clover.
Oh. Hello.
Good evening, Mr. Allen. This is Detective Muggerton.
How do you do?
Mr. Allen?
Won't you come in?
Thank you.
You, sir, you'll find that chair comfortable. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Clover, that one. And I'll sit right here. What do you think of her, sir?
Not me?
Yes, I saw you staring at her portrait. The reaction of strangers who come into my home.
Yeah, I stared. You had a very beautiful wife.
It's a pity you didn't know her.
Yeah, it is. It always is.
I hardly expected such a civilized reaction.
What are you talking about, Mr. Allen?
Well, here we are, 3 men chatting in a most urbane manner about a beautiful vessel most foully destroyed.
You mean your wife hit over the head with a jackhammer?
Exactly that. Now, let's see. What is going to be your approach?
Let's try it this way. We've found out a great deal about your wife.
Oh, really? Please tell me.
Hey, Danny, you told me Mr. Allen was all broken up when he found out about his wife.
Another lesson in civilization I give you, sir. Permit yourself animal anguish, but only momentarily, so that life can go on.
Now, remember that.
This is the point we have reached. You gentlemen have found out a good deal about my wife. Tell me, name names, places, things of a person's existence. My wife.
Tom Marino.
Oh, yes. I heard about him. But much later, a year or so ago, he introduced himself to me after a lecture I had given, an analysis of something. I believe it was of the Near Eastern situation. He introduced himself to me.
How did you 2 boys get along?
We went to a place and got drunk for almost identical reasons. Mr. Marino insisted on picking up the tab.
Now let's try Ann Marden.
People like Ann Marden come to hear my lectures and take copious notes. Nothing special.
But a good friend of your wife's.
Ann Marden is kind. But come, really, you're baiting me. You say something.
All right. But it's difficult for me to say.
Well, I can't help you there. I would figure out a way to phrase it.
Tell us how you'd say your wife was a stupid woman.
I'd use the word stupid.
For a man like you, the reason for killing her.
A man like me? What kind of man am I?
Very high class. I'd use the word smart because I don't know any better.
I do. And therefore I'd use the word taste.
Okay, Mr. Allen, as long as we understand each other. You fell in love with Joan Westfall, married her, found out that she was...
stupid? Go on.
Years of it.
5 years of
it. She couldn't even get a driver's license. You wouldn't permit her to drive.
Why, yes. Yes, Sarah. Little things like that. Everything bewildered her. But that's the pose.
This quality about your wife, this vagueness, the smile of hers. Wise, mysterious.
Well, that portrait just above you. That's the best for that. Surely. That's it. Suppose she didn't talk because she had nothing to say. Ever.
What happened the night before last, Mr. Allen?
Oh? Not so far after all.
Just to relieve your mind about that, Mr. Allen, we know she borrowed a car. We know she went to a man's apartment. And we know you know she did.
Who cared about that?
But it was the annoyances, huh, Mr. Allen?
The annoyances.
Nothing premeditated, huh?
I must tell you what she did, this stupid woman. She had a flat tire. This baffled her. A flat tire and the world had suddenly collapsed around her. Big tragedy. Alone and lost. Maya Jones. And she called me. Tears, please come. Tragedy. I ran to her. I saw what it was. A flat tire. A simple thing. I started to fix it. Tears, apologies. Finally, when I had changed tires, I did the uncivilized thing.
Slugged her with a jackhandle.
Yes. The flat tire. The total of all the annoyances.
And put her in the trunk. Why?
Why? It occurred to me that this was procedure in such cases. Classic procedure. I'm the man for that. Now, shall we go?
A haze covers Broadway now, and for a time the street is dimly seen, dimly heard. And for this instant, Broadway is stunned. But suddenly, the spectaculars explode. The lights plume upward, and the hawkers gather. It's night, and it started all over again. It's Broadway. The gaudiest. The most violent. The lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Ben Wright was heard as Robert. Featured in the cast were Mary Shipp, Peter Leeds, High Everback, and Larry Dobkin. Bill Anders speaking. Nothing small time about Charlie McCarthy. Tomorrow night, with vocalist star Howard Keel visiting the show, Charlie turns songwriter, composing a Broadway musical. Enjoy Edgar, Charlie, their guest Howard Keel, and the rest of the Bergen and McCarthy gang tomorrow night on most of these same CBS radio stations. And remember, Eve Arden as Our Miss Brooks teaches you how to laugh Sundays on the CBS Radio Network.
from New York, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men, and 1036 leading retail stores from coast to coast, present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is portrayed by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Well, here we are again in Dr. Watson's study. We find him seated in the large armchair in front of a crackling fire.
Good evening, Mr. Harris.
Good evening, Dr. Watson. Now, don't get up. You look very comfortable right where you are. And from the redness of your cheeks, I'd say you've had a good day off in the country somewhere.
Oh, that's where you're wrong, Mr. Harris. I've been doing museums most of the day, and it's very tiring work, especially with two small boys in tow.
I should think so. But where did you collect the kindergarten, Doctor?
Oh, it was a brace of nephews of mine. I was helping along with their education, you know. It's a custom in my family that the uncles must take the nephews museum visiting once a year. I remember as a boy being dragged through miles of art galleries.
But, Doctor, weren't you ever taken to the British Museum?
Oh, yes, and to Madame Tussauds. But the Tower of London was my favorite. The uncle who took me there was quite a fancier of precious stones. He explained the history of every jewel in the Crown's collection.
That must have been an education in itself. They say every famous gem leaves a trail of bloodshed and high adventure across the pages of history. And, by the way, isn't your story tonight about a famous jewel?
Oh, yes, that is what reminded me so strongly of my boyhood visits to the Tower. The famous Mazarin stone I'm going to tell you about had a history that would make your hair curl. Dear me, I little did I think when I saw it as a boy that I would ever hold that great yellow beauty in my own hands.
Great Scott, and did you, Doctor?
Before I tell you that, Mr. Harris, suppose I give you a few moments to say a few words about our sponsor's most estimable product.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. As you put it, sir, it is indeed an estimable product. So esteemed, may I say, that beginning in 1948, over 1,000 leading stores from coast to coast are Clipper Craft dealers. To be exact, there are 1,036 such distinguished establishments. Those leading stores across the country are, of course, the key to the amazing values so unique to Clipper Craft clothes. The 1,036 leading stores are part of the famous Clipper Craft plan. In this plan, their buying power is concentrated to effect tremendous savings in manufacturing and distribution costs. Savings which are all yours. That's why truly fine Clipper Craft suits are only $40 and $45. Why Clipper Craft top coats and overcoats are only $40. And sport jackets only $26.50. Clipper Craft values are truly out of this world. Compare them with clothes selling for many dollars more. Dr. Watson, let's get back to the story of the Mazarin stone.
Yes, let me see. Where was I? Oh, yes, I'd been married some years and had resumed my practice when one snowy winter afternoon, one of my calls took me in the neighborhood of Baker Street. I couldn't resist the temptation to drop in and find out for myself what my colleague Sherlock Holmes was up to. As I stood there in the falling snow waiting for someone to answer the bell, I glanced up at the window of his study, and there I saw the thin nose and saturnine features of the great detective. He was apparently deeply engrossed in a book. Presently the door was opened, and there stood Mrs. Hudson.
Well, bless my soul, if it isn't the doctor. Good day to you, sir. It's a pleasure seeing you again.
Why, Mrs. Hudson, you're looking as beautiful as ever. You don't change at all.
Nor do you, sir. You and your blarney.
And how is the great man himself?
Him? He's in bed asleep, I think.
But I just saw him through the window.
So that fooled you, too. That's not him.
What do you mean?
Just you be going upstairs and find out for yourself. I'm not the one to be giving secrets away. Least of all, Mr. Holmes' secret.
So, he's asleep in the middle of the afternoon, eh?
Yes, sir.
I suppose that means a case.
Yes, sir. He's hard at it now, and he's getting thinner and thinner. When will it be pleased to dine, Mr. Holmes, sir, I'll ask him. 7:30, the day after tomorrow, he'll say. You know his way when he's on a case.
Yes, I seem to remember.
He's a following someone.
Don't say.
Yes, sir. Yesterday he was out dressed like a workman, looking for a job. Today he was an old woman. Fair took me in, he did. And Lord knows I ought to be knowing his ways by now. You'll see his old woman's umbrella leaning up against the sofa in his study.
Dear me, and what is this case all about?
Well, I don't mind telling you, sir, but mind you don't let it go any farther.
Cross my heart, Mrs. Hudson.
Very well, then. The case of the Crown Diamond.
What? The 100,000-pound burglary?
Yes, sir. And Mr. Holmes is getting it back for him. Why, would you believe it? Yesterday we had the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary sitting on Mr. Holmes' sofa, both at the same time.
Oh, I hope it stood up under the strain. And how did Holmes behave to such famous persons on his couch?
Him? He was very nice to them and put them right at their ease.
Oh, indeed.
Yes, sir. Then there was old Lord Cantlemere. Oh, you know what that means.
Yes.
He's a stiff un, if I do say so. I can get along with the Prime Minister, and I've nothing against the Home Secretary. He seems an obliging sort of man with a civil tongue in his head, but I can't abide his lordship.
Oh, poor fellow.
Yes, sir, and neither can Mr. Holmes. You see, he don't believe in Mr. Holmes, and he's against employing him. He'd rather he failed.
Does Holmes know that, do you think?
Mr. Holmes knows whatever there is to know.
Oh, absolutely. But I say, perhaps I'd better not wake him.
Oh, I wish you would, sir. He's not had a bite to eat since yesterday noon, and then only a sandwich with a glass of milk. And I don't dare speak to him about it. You know what he's like, sir, when he's busy on a case.
Oh, quite. Well, suppose I go up and beard the lion in his den, eh? I say, Holmes, are you awake? He must be asleep. Well, I'll go in anyway. Same old place and the same old litter. Scientific charts, chemicals, violin, pipes, papers, all higgledy-piggledy. There's the old boy himself, snoozing in the armchair in front of the window. I thought I saw him from the street. I just go over and tweak in the air.
Watson, come away from that window.
What? Good gracious, Holmes, you gave me a start.
Come away from that window if you value your life.
Well, very well, very well. But I say, Holmes, this is all very confusing. Here I see you sitting in your armchair, and suddenly you pop out of me from your bedroom door. Since when have you been twins?
Yes, it is rather a startling likeness, isn't it?
Likeness?
Yes, it's a wax image of me. I'm expecting to get a bullet through its beautiful head at any moment. Would you mind drawing the blinds without exposing yourself?
Oh, all right.
It's better. Now I can come into the room.
Yes, but why all this hocus-pocus?
I'm being watched from a window across the street by a gentleman with an unpleasantly efficient air gun. Yes, Watson, you come at a critical moment.
Yes, so I gather.
How far am I justified in allowing you to share this danger with me, I wonder?
Danger? What kind of danger?
Sudden death. I'm expecting something this evening.
Expecting what?
To be murdered, Watson.
Oh, you're joking.
Even my limited sense of humor could produce a better joke than that. Perhaps you'd better go while there's still time.
My dear Holmes, you couldn't get me out of here now at the point of a revolver.
Good. But sit down, sit down. May as well be comfortable in the meantime. How about a pipe and a glass of brandy? They have to take the place of food these days.
But why not eat?
The faculties become refined when you starve them.
Oh, rubbish.
What your digestion gains in the way of blood supply is so much lost to the brain. Present, I'm all brain.
But this danger, Holmes.
His name is Silvius. Better write it down. Count Negretto Silvius. 136 Moorside Gardens, Northwest.
Moorside Gardens, Northwest.
Got it?
Yes.
Good. You can give it to Scotland Yard with my love and a parting blessing in case the murderer is successful.
Look here, Holmes. I'm in on this. I've nothing to do for a day or two.
Your
and I've
morals don't improve, Watson. Now you've added fibbing to your other vices. You bear every sign of the busy medical man.
Oh, to blazes with that. I say, can't you have this fellow arrested?
Yes, I can. That's why he's determined to kill me.
Well, then why don't you?
Because I don't know where he's hidden the confounded diamond.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Hudson told me. The missing crown jewel.
I've cast my net, Watson, and got my fish. But what's the use of catching them if the jewels slip through my fingers?
And is this Count Silvius one of your so-called fish?
Yes, he's the shark. The other is Sam Merton, the boxer. He's the Count's tool. Sam's not a shark. He's a great bull-headed gudgeon. Come in, come in. Ah, Mrs. Hudson, what is it?
A gentleman downstairs to see you, sir. Here's his card.
Count Negretto Silvius. Well, well, so the old shark is grasping the nettle, eh?
That metaphor is a trifle mixed, Holmes.
Show him up, Mrs. Hudson, when I ring. If I'm not in the room, show him up all the same.
Yes.
Man of nerve, Watson. Possibly you've heard of his reputation as a big game hunter. What a triumphant ending to his sporting record if he succeeds in adding me to his bag. This is proof that he feels my breath uncomfortably hot on his neck.
Look here, why not send for the police?
Not yet. Not quite yet. Take a glance out of the window, Watson, and see if anyone's hanging about.
Yes, all right. There's one rough-looking fellow near the door.
That will be Sam. Faithful but fatuous.
I say, look here, Holmes, this is serious. I insist on staying with you.
But you'll be in the way.
In his way?
No, in mine.
Well, I'm not going to budge.
Very well, we'll compromise. You shall stay in the bedroom within call in case I need you.
Yes, but Holmes...
Come along. It's essential that this room be empty when the Count enters it. He's come for his own purpose, but he may stay for mine. Hurry, I think I hear his step on the stairs.
Oh, he's not in here, sir. But won't you step in? I'm sure he'll be back in a moment.
Many thanks.
And now you'll pardon me, sir.
Certainly. So, this is his den, eh? His bottles and his papers and all the rest of his hocus-pocus. Ah, softly, Sylvia, softly. There's the old vulture himself asleep in his chair. What luck, eh, Sylvius? One tap for my gold-headed cane.
Don't break it, Count, don't break it. Holmes, you, quite. I trust you weren't expecting someone else. I see you've been admiring my waxed figure. Pretty little thing, isn't it? Tavernier made it. He's almost as good at waxworks as your friend Straubenzee is at air guns.
Air guns? What do you mean?
First, put your hat and stick on the side table. Thank you. Now, pray take a seat. Perhaps you'd like to put your revolver on the table, too. No, you prefer to sit on it? Very well. This visit is most opportune. I want a few minutes' chat with you.
Good. I, too, wish to have some words with you.
May I ask why all these personal attentions?
Because you annoy me. You have put your creatures on my tracks.
My creatures? I assure you, no.
Nonsense. I've had them followed. Well, two can play at that game, my friend. Yesterday, there was a sporting old gentleman. Today, it was an elderly woman.
You flatter me, Count. Old Baron Dawson said the night before he was hanged that in my case, what the law had gained, the stage had lost. And now you praise my impersonations. Dear me.
It was you. You yourself?
Quite. There's the old lady's umbrella you were gracious enough to hand back to me when we collided in the minories this morning.
If I had only known.
I would never have seen this humble home again, eh? Oh, well, we all have our neglected opportunities.
You admit you have docked me. Why?
You used to shoot lions in Algeria?
Well.
But why?
Why? The sport, the excitement, the danger.
And no doubt to free the country from the pest.
Exactly.
Well, those are my reasons in a nutshell.
Quick. You did. I'll show you.
Sit down at once and take your hand from your hip pocket. That's better. There's another, more practical reason. I want that diamond.
Fancy that.
Your reason in coming here is to find out how much I know, so you may judge how far my removal is necessary. Well, I shall say from your point of view, it's quite essential.
Absolutely.
In short, there's only one thing I do not know.
And what is the missing fact, if I may inquire?
Where is the crown diamond hidden?
Dear me. So that's it. Suppose I don't know.
You can't bluff me, Silvius. You're absolutely plate glass. I can see to the very back of your mind.
Really? Well, then, of course, you see where the diamond is.
You know, then. You've admitted it.
I admit nothing.
Oh, come, come. Be reasonable. If not, you'll get hurt.
And you talk to me about bluff.
You see this notebook?
Surely.
You know what I keep in it?
No, I don't pretend to be a mind reader.
This book is you.
Me?
Yes, you. Every move of your filthy, dangerous life.
You know, Holmes, there are limits to my patience.
It's here, all of it. The real facts in the death of Mrs. Harold, who left you the Blymer estate.
Fabrication.
The complete life history of Miss Minnie Warrender.
You can't prove anything.
And plenty more. Here is a robbery in the train de luxe to the Riviera on February the 13th, 1892. The forged check on the Crédit Lyonnais.
No, you're wrong there.
Then I am right about the others.
Oh.
Now then, Count. You're a card player. And the other fellow has all the trumps. Time to throw in your hand.
What connection is all this with the theft of the crown jewels?
Patience, my dear fellow, patience. I have the cabman who took you to Whitehall, the one who drove you away. I have the commissionaire who saw you near the case.
That proves nothing.
I have Ikey Sanders.
Ikey?
Yes, Ikey Sanders, who refused to cut it up for you. Ikey has peached.
Ikey? Oh, wait till I get
yes,
my...
that is the hand I play from. Only one card is missing. The ace of diamonds.
You'll never get it.
No? Consider, you're going to be locked up for 20 years, you and Sam. Perhaps longer. What good will the diamond be to you then? None in the world. Now, we don't want you, and we don't want Sam. We want the diamond. Give it up, and as far as we're concerned, you are free if you behave yourself in the future. My commission is to get the stone, not you.
And if I refuse?
Then it will be you, and not the stone. I think it might be as well to have your friend Sam at this conference. He's waiting outside in the street. Suppose you tap on the window and motion him to come up. Oh, Mrs. Hudson will let him in. She's quite used to my receiving curious characters.
Very well. He's coming. Now, what are you going to do?
I have a shark and a gudgeon in my net. Now I'm drawing it. Up they come together.
You will never die in your bed, Holmes.
Does it matter very much? It's no use fingering your pistol, my friend. You wouldn't dare to use it, even if I gave you time to draw. Mighty things, revolvers. Better stick to air guns. But listen, isn't that the fairy footstep of your friend, Mr. Merton? Come in, Sam, come in. Rather dull waiting in the street, isn't it?
What's up, Governor?
It's all up, Sam. Put it in the nutshell.
What's this cove trying to do? Be funny? I'm not in a funny mood myself.
No, I expect not. And I can promise you that you'll feel even less humorous as the evening progresses. Now, look here, Silvius, I can't waste time. I'm going into that bedroom. I shall play on my violin for 5 minutes. At the end of that time, I shall return for your decision. Do we take you, or do we get the stone? Now, where did I put my violin?
I said this.
5 minutes, remember.
Has a great reputation for fine quality. That's what you go by when you choose your first Clippercraft suit. And once you've worn Clippercraft, you learn how marvelously it stands up to hard wear, how very comfortable you feel in it. The long wear comes from fine materials and precision workmanship. Your comfort comes from excellent fit, resulting from skilled designing. What will amaze you is how so much is possible for so very little. Remember, Clippercraft suits are only $40 and $45. Clippercraft top coats and overcoats are only $40, and sport jackets only $26.50. These are modest prices indeed for clothes obviously worth much more. The great Clippercraft plan, concentrating the buying power of 1,036 leading stores across the nation, makes these remarkable values possible. In your own local independent store, the store you can trust. Selling expensive clothes at inexpensive low prices at the nation's finest independent stores is the great big idea behind the Clippercraft plan. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suit, top coat, and overcoat. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Now let's return to 221B Baker Street, where Count Silvius and his henchman Sam are discussing their dilemma, while Sherlock Holmes' violin can still be heard in the next room.
Ah, do play pretty, don't he?
Oh, shut up, Sam.
Look here, does this mean that he knows about the stone?
He knows too much about it. I'm not sure he doesn't know everything.
Good Lord.
Ikey Sanders has split.
Oh, he has he? Oh, I'll do him a thicker for that, see if I do.
That won't help us now. To make up our minds.
Hey, off him, Mo. He's a leery cove. What if he's listening?
How can he be with that violin squeaking like that?
Oh, sir, there he is, sitting right in that chair.
Rot, it's only a dummy.
Oh, fake, eh? Well, strike me, Madame Tussauds, ain't it? It was a living spit of him, dressing gown and all.
Oh, shut up. You're wasting our time, and there isn't any too much. He can jail us over the stone.
The deuce he can.
But he'll let us go if we tell him where the stone is.
What? Give up 100,000 quid?
It's one or the other.
He's in there alone. Let's do him in.
He's armed and ready. That's too noisy. He'll never get away. Besides, it's likely the police have whatever evidence he's collected. What was that? I'd have sworn I heard something move over there in the window.
Something in the street, most likely. Oh, look here, Governor. You've got the brains. If slugging's no good, it's up to you.
Yes. I fooled better men than he. Stone is here in my secret pocket. I can get out of England tonight, cut it into 4 pieces in Amsterdam before Sunday. He knows nothing about Mansada.
But the false bottom ain't ready.
We must chance it as it is. Not a moment to lose. As for Holmes, the fool won't arrest us if he can get the stone. We'll put him on the wrong track. And before he discovers it is wrong, it'll be in Holland. And we'll be out of the country.
Sounds good to me. I wonder you dare carry it.
Where would it be safer?
Let's have a look at it.
What's the idea, huh?
What's up, Matty? You think I'm going to snatch it off you? Now, look here, mister. I'm getting fed
no
up with
offense,
you.
No offense, Sam. We can't afford to quarrel. Now, here. Come over here to the window. Out of the line of that keyhole. Now, there. Hold it to the light. It is a beauty, no?
Thank you, gentlemen.
What? Holmes!
Oh, I thought you said he was a dummy.
Dear me, not very flattering of you, Count.
Why, you scowl, you thief!
Temper, temper. No violence, gentlemen, please. Consider the furniture. Police are waiting below. But how the deuce there is a second door to my bedroom behind that window curtain? I thought the game was up when you heard me displace the dummy.
I believe you're the devil himself.
You flatter me. Ah, but here are our friends from Scotland Yard. Take them away, boys.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but I say, how about the blooming fiddle? It's still playing.
Quite right, Sam. Remarkable invention, the gramophone. Let it play.
Come along, Ed. All right. Come on, get moving. That's it.
All right, Watson, you can stop that machine.
I say, Holmes, I've lost at least 5 pounds in the last half hour.
Very beneficial to your waistline. Oh. You're becoming disgustingly plump. Look at this.
Why, it's the crown diamond.
Hello, what's up now? Come in, come in. Oh, Mrs. Hudson.
Lord Kentlemere's here.
What again? Can't he ever let us alone? Well, show him up.
He's up, sir, begging your pardon.
Well, I must say, Holmes, you have most unmannerly people in your household. I ran into a group of ruffians as I was coming to the door.
Oh, that must have been the fellows from Scotland Yard. It's rather warm in here. May I take your overcoat, Lord Kentlemere?
No, I'm quite comfortable. Quite comfortable. Furthermore, I have no intention of staying.
Dr. Watson will assure you that these sudden changes of temperature are most insidious.
Take your hands off my coat. I intend to keep it on.
Very well.
I came to see how your self-appointed task is getting on.
It's difficult. Very difficult.
Yes, I suspected you would find it so. Every man has his limitations.
Yes, I've been greatly perplexed.
No doubt.
Especially on one point. But perhaps you can help me.
You apply for my advice rather late in the day. Still, I'm ready to give you the benefit of my opinions.
You understand, we can doubtless frame a case against the actual thieves.
Once you have caught them.
Quite. But the real question is, how shall we proceed against the receiver? What would you regard as the final evidence against the receiver?
The actual possession of the stone, of course.
You would arrest him on that?
Why, certainly.
In that case, my dear Lord Cantlemere, I shall be under the painful necessity of advising your arrest.
Forget yourself, Mr. Holmes. I have no time for such childish jokes. I may tell you frankly, sir, that I have never had any belief in your powers. Good evening.
One moment. Actually, to make off with a Mazarin stone would be even more serious if he found in temporary possession of it.
It is intolerable. Let me pass immediately.
Just put your hand in the right-hand pocket of your overcoat.
What do you mean?
Do as I ask.
Well, I... However,
say, what's this? Seems to be the Mazarin stone. For shame, sir, for shame.
Well, bless my soul. How on thunder? Well, I'll be...
Undoubtedly. However, I really must apologize. I never could resist a dramatic situation. I took the liberty of slipping the stone into your pocket at the beginning of our interview.
Well, to say I am bewildered is putting it mildly. We are greatly indebted to you, sir, in spite of your somewhat perverted sense of humor. And I certainly withdraw any reflection I may have made on your amazing professional part. How could you shoot?
The details can wait. I trust your pleasure in relaying news of our success will be some small atonement for my practical joke.
Oh, yes, it will, sir. It will indeed. I can hardly wait to get the good word around. Good day, Mr. Holmes.
Good day, Lord Cantlemere. Watson, will you show his lordship out?
With pleasure.
And tell Mrs. Hudson I should be obliged if you'd send up dinner for two as soon as possible. What an extraordinary story, Dr. Watson, and what a perfect climax.
Yes, Mr. Harris. Holmes always had an eye for the dramatic. Which reminds me, next week's story...
Did you say that next week's story is going to be particularly dramatic, Doctor?
I didn't say it, Mr. Harris, because you interrupted me. But I was going to. Yes, next week I'm going to tell you how the 5-year-old racehorse Blazing Star suddenly dropped dead of old age. And how my youthful prowess in the game of rugby saved Holmes and myself from a diabolical plot of our arch enemy, Professor Moriarty.
The makers of Clippercraft Clothes and 1036 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Case of Sudden Senility. If you'd like to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcasts in New York, see your local Clippercraft dealer, and he'll tell you how to obtain your tickets. This is Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the world's largest network, serving more than 450 radio stations and mutual broadcasting systems.
That's Case Closed for this week. You can find more from Broadway Is My Beat, Sherlock Holmes, Case Closed, and all the other Relic Radio shows at relicradio.com. Find our Shoutcast stream working there as well, and you can donate through the website if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. Help keep them coming every week. Give that donate button a click. Thanks to everyone who has helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.